Okay, fine. So, so one of the things I like teaching in general is studying pieces in Agadah and really trying to take them seriously. This particular piece of Agadah is crossover between classic Agadah and philosophy. So much of Agadah contributes to philosophy. Specifically, I wanted to give this shiir just because while I was alternating with my wife driving down from Toronto, so I had a book to read, this was in David Beshevkin wrote a book on sin and Jewish thought. So this is based on a footnote, little discussion there in the footnote. But I thought it was an interesting question. I wanted to explore it together, and that's the question of when do the thoughts of sin count as sin? Okay, or do they? On Thursday, I'll come back to this question, I think, in the share that I'm giving from Ishmar, I think, and explore it from a different angle. But we'll start with this place. Okay, but if I ask you before we look at the sources, what do you think? Is the thought to commit a sin, is that considered sinful? And if it is or isn't, define what I mean by the thought to commit sin. Yeah, Adam. Okay, good. So Adam distinguishes between different types of thought, right? But not yet different types of sin, correct?
Sure.
Different types of thought, different types of sin. So if you have a fleeting thought to, I don't know,
yeah.
Steal something, sure. I don't know, plow during Shemitah, whatever the case may be. So that's not a problem. But if you what?
If you linger on it and contemplate, if you get close enough to actually going through it.
Okay, so now you're saying two different things, right?
Sure.
So is it, let's be careful, right? So is it, right, one is the difference between fleeting and, let's say, thoughts that have duration, okay? We'll leave it vague. The other is thoughts about sin versus concrete plans to commit sin, right? Those are not the same, right? You could dwell on fantasizing about committing a sin without actually coming up with concrete plans to commit a sin, and theoretically you could do the opposite, right? You could sort of, on a whim come up with plans to commit a sin, right? So which one do you mean? Is it about duration or is it about the concreteness? Okay, concreteness, good. Now, does it matter whether you end up committing the sin?
I think it's more severe if you end up committing the sin.
That's not what I asked you. It's definitely more severe, but that's not what I asked you. Is it, does it matter whether you end up succeeding?
If you end up succeeding or if you end up trying?
You tell me.
And
I will say, we're going to come back to some of this on Thursday. We're just going to set it. We're going to do one aspect of it now, but we'll see that the halachic issue here is actually much more complicated. But what would you guess?
I guess that it doesn't, and that it still counts whether or not you actually follow through.
Okay, so Adam takes the position that the type of thought that could independently count as sin is concrete plans to commit a sin, whether or not you actualize them. Okay, that's the thesis we've gotten from Adam. Yeah.
Okay, well, there are definitely averos that are intrinsically just thoughts, like those sins, those titor, tegol, right? So there are sins that are just improper thoughts.
Okay, good. So now, right, we have another suggestion, which is that it's not based on the intensity of the thought, but it's on the nature of the sin. Now, both might be true, right? It could be that even within the context of which certain sins, it has to be a certain type of thought, right? But now we move to it. So you listed a few that you assume are thought-based, right? If I caught it correctly, you said, right, don't hate, which at least at first glance sounds like it's a thought-oriented sin. Pigul, right, which, okay, maybe, right? Meaning pigul is definitely, the status of pigul is created by thought, right? Meaning if I chef a carbon, having in mind that I am going to right? Eat it outside. Lizmano. So I've created the status of pigle, right? And now if I were to consume the pigle, right? So now I would be liable to the punishments that come with that, right? The question of what exactly is going on when I am a pigle, it probably depends, right? Meaning it probably is somewhat sinful what exactly is going on. There's also questions of mazik, but okay, potentially pigle, good. And then holding grudge, that one's a little bit more complicated, right? Because the sugyas in the second paragraph of Yoma assume that seems to be action-based, and it's not clear whether the sin is really action-based or the action needs to qualify the thought process, right? Because what is the classic lo-tzitar according to the Gemara? Hold a grudge, right? The Gemara contrasts two related averot, lo-tzikom, lo-tzitar, right? Don't take revenge and don't hold a grudge. And the distinction for the Gemara is lo-tzikom is Adam. I ask Adam, can I borrow a hammer? And Adam, being the mean person that he is, says, I can't even as a thought experiment, doesn't work, Adam. But fine. He says, no, I will not lend you the, I know you from before, I can pick on you a little bit more. I will not lend you the hammer. And then the next day, Adam comes to me and says, can I borrow a screwdriver? And I say, no, because you didn't lend me the screwdriver, I won't lend it. That's nekama. But if instead I say, of course you can, because I'm a better person than you, Adam, right? So of course I'll lend you the screwdriver, even though you didn't lend me the hammer, then I didn't violate lo tikkum, but I violated lo titor, right? So there's an action involved. It still may be, that the thought is primarily in sin, but another possible distinction are averot that, by their very nature, lend themselves to being more thought-oriented. Okay.
One separate thing, actually.
Yeah.
I've heard that, I think one of my rabbis said that there's no actual sin in it, or there's no onus for Girhor, but it's still a sin.
Good. So then there's a possibility that there is culpability, but it's lesser, right? Right. It's not necessarily true that it's black and white, right? Because as we know, there are gradations in pretty much any criminal system. There are gradations to crimes, right? And even if you don't punish for thought, thought does contribute to the severity of punishment, right? So, you know, take American law, right? If someone kills someone, so if it's premeditated, right? So then it's called
first degree
murder, right? Or homicide, right? What if it's completely unintentional, but it could have been prevented? Then it's called manslaughter. Right, the different degrees, first, second, third, right, of all of these, right? One year when we did mock trials, it was a manslaughter case. So we had to, like, go through all of it a little. There's a lot of lumps there. But it does, right, it does contribute. So yeah, it's possible that when we say, does it count, right, there's a range of what counting means. Very good. Okay. Yes, please.
So I think it also matters what it means by count in terms of, like,
but everyone, as you go, just remind me a name and the name you want to go by specifically. I don't know if you have nicknames, this, whatever.
So I don't go by.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if you go by first names, last names, whatever.
Right.
You know. What? Okay. Fine. Yeah.
So,
anyways,
look,
we all have these things. Yeah.
I think it matters whether they count. Do you mean, like, are you over, like, historically and also in terms of, like, a philosophical count?
Good, right. Then we can talk about, well, maybe it's not an avera in the legal sense, but, right, as the Rambam notes in Avot, the first parak, in Mishnah, Tzed Zayin or Yud Zayin, there are different counts of Mishnah. You should know that, right? Parak Yavet specifically, the count is a little bit thrown off, but either Tzed Zayin or Yud Zayin, at the end of the parak, the one that talks about Dibur, right? The Rambam notes that there are really five categories when you're talking about religiosity. It's not Asur Mutter, right, and Chiyuv. It's, right, there's Asur and Mitzvah at the extremes. There's neutral, there's Mutter in the middle, and then there's what? Right, so that would be more legal, but here he has a less legal category, which is what Ezra's talking about. Migunel Mishubach, right? Things that are praiseworthy, but are not technically a Mitzvah, right, and things that are, right, migune, they're wrong, but they're not usher. Right, so it could be that, do they count? We're talking about a range here, right? And Right, we can, on Thursday, we'll see a little bit more of complicated cases, right, which is what happens if I intend to do an Avera, and but I end up doing a mitzvah, does that further complicate the situation? Okay, good. Right now, I will just throw out, but I don't want to get bogged down in it. At the moment, yeah. Sorry, remind me name.
Michael,
okay.
So,
what?
Goes by Michael.
Okay, that's good.
So, I've heard, I don't remember where, that if you plan to do something, so like if I'm planning to do something, and I plan it all out, but in the end it doesn't happen, there's no question. However, if you made a plan to steal on multiple occasions and you've done it, and then you make another plan to steal, you have it all mapped out, but in the end you don't, can you still count it as if you did?
Okay, so Michael's already pointing to the Gemara that we're going to start with, which, right, deals with the question of, okay, what if I try to actually go through with it, right? Does that change it, and does it, and are there, right, distinctions on, right, how seriously we have to assume that you would have, that you actually would end up doing this? But that's the Gemara that we're going to come to now, okay? Now again, in general philosophy, right, sometimes you'll get discussions about this. I don't know how much you've studied ethics, like theories of ethics, how much you know about philosophical theories of ethics. A little bit? No? Okay. Right, there are certain theories of ethics where this entire question would not get off the ground. Broadly speaking, the theories of ethics that go under the category of consequentialist ethics, which means, as they sound, right, ethics are defined by the consequences, right? The most famous, probably, what? Yeah, probably, right? Now, the most famous modern version of consequentialism is utilitarianism, right, where the specific consequence you're talking about is utility, right? Though people have suggested other consequentialist models, right, and the fathers of that theory are Bentham and Mill, and though there are distinctions between them. There is amongst philosophers, a very well-known critique of consequentialism, which cuts to our question, which is called the moral luck argument, right? What's the moral luck argument? Exactly what it sounds like, which is...
get lucky and be moral.
Yeah, you can get lucky and be moral, but unlucky and not be moral, right? I spend my entire life trying to do something right, it turns out it was wrong, now I'm an immoral person because I caused bad consequences, right? And I could spend my entire life trying to do something terrible, and it turns out well... right, according to any consequentialist theory, I should be okay, right? And I get morally lucky, right? So that's one of the critiques of, which implicitly recognizes there should be value to planning and thought. There are others, right? There's virtue ethics, right? Which is sort of in classic philosophy is identified with Aristotle, is the ethics. And Jewish thought is adopted like by Rambam with nuances, but fundamentally the belief that the point of doing good is not the act themselves, but right, exactly, the creation of good, virtuous people. Now, obviously, in that system, thought should be more important, right? Because if it's about forming you, thoughts contribute to that very significantly, right? So that should be relevant, right? And then another theory of ethics are called deontological ethics, which is, at least in modern philosophy, most commonly identified with Kant, right? With Kant, at least in the short version, in the grounding, the metaphysics, the morals, the fundamentals, the principle, whatever, however you want to translate it from the German, where there are objective moral principles you follow no matter what happens, right? You figure them out through what's called the categorical imperative, which doesn't matter for now, but basically, right, you figure out if the whole world would follow your action, would the world survive? If yes, then it's a moral thing. If not, it's not. And it gets to very extreme conclusions, right? So if you conclude that lying is bad, so according to Kant, even if you were lying to save your son's life from a murderer, that would be wrong because lying is wrong, right? And he doesn't recognize distinctions between types of lying. But in deontology, right, thoughts, harder to tell whether they matter. Okay, but let's look at Samakara and see how some of these things play out, okay? So, the Gemara number one in Kiddushin Lamed Tet says, Rava Amar Hamani, Rabbi Yaakov Hidi Amar Schar Mitzvah Bahai Amaleka. The Gemara is talking about reward for mitzvot in this world. So the Gemara says there is no reward for mitzvot in this world. Titania, as the Braita says, Rabbi Yaakov Amar, Ein Lecha Kol Mitzvah Mitzvah Shektuva Batara Shematan Schara Bitzidav. She'ein Tchera Meitim Tluya Ba. Right, there is no mitzvah in the Torah where the reward is written next to it. That is not where Tzchir HaMeitim is not contingent on it. Kivat Av Eim Ktiv L'man Yerich Un Yomech Ol Man Yitav Lach Ushol Chakein Ktiv L'man Yitav Lach Varach Tayyamim Haresh Amar Lo Aviv Alei Liv Bira Velei Li Zalot V'Ala Li Bira V'Shalach Et Eim V'Natal Adamed Et HaBanim U'V'Chazirato Nafal U'Meit Heichan Tovat Yamav Shel Zeh. So the Gemara then says, why is it that Tzchir HaMeitim so important to Scarva? Onesha brings a story. This is just background to what we're getting to. But Kibud Av Aim and Shiluach HaKein, right, sending away the mother bird, both of them, the reward is long life. So what if a parent told you, go fulfill the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein, and then as the person is doing it, he dies, right? He falls off the tree and breaks his neck, right? So now he doubly should have gotten long life. And instead he dies in the process of doing the mitzvah. A double mitzvah, doesn't that show there is no justice? At least in some versions in Chazal, it was this particular incident where this happened that led Acher to go off the derech, right? Obviously there are different versions of the Acher story in the Gemara, in the Bavli, in the Yerushalmi, in the Midrash, etc. So the Gemara says, Heichan Tovet Yamim Shel Zeh, Heichan Arichot Yamim Shel Zeh. Sumer says, Eleman Yitav Loch La'olam Shekulo Tov, Leman Yarichon Yamecha La'olam Shekulo Aruch. It must be that this reward really means that you get rewarded in the world to come, and therefore there is no violation of divine justice. The Gemara says, how do you know? Why are you resorting to the world to come? Maybe the reason the guy died is because he looks righteous on the outside, but he's not. V'dilma lav hachi haveh, Rabbi Yaakov maaseh chaza. So Gemara says, well, wait a second. So Rabbi Yaakov actually saw this story. So Gemara says, okay, fine. But v'dilma meharher be'avera haveh, maybe he was thinking about Avero. So the Hava Mina of the Gemara is, don't worry about it. You never have to deal with the problem of divine justice, because whenever something looks unjust, you see someone doing mitzvot and he gets punished, the solution is, he was thinking about sin. What sin? When? Right? How intensely? We don't know. But the Gemara now says there must be something where sin, the thought of sin, is so egregious that it would count as an Avera, presumably to offset the mitzvah that he's doing, right? So that's quite a strong thesis. Then what does the Gemara say? No, Machshava Ra'a Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitzarfa L'Ma'aseh. Evil thoughts God does not combine to actions. Now that is interesting. What is, right, what does that sound like?
It's not saying that the bad thoughts aren't bad enough to get you killed. It's just saying it's not combined to action.
Right. Now, so you'd say, well, wait a second. The answer should have been, well, bad thoughts don't count. Evil thoughts don't count. It doesn't say that. It says they aren't joined to the action. What does joined to the action mean?
Not considered as if they did the action.
Well, so that, so you could look at it and say it's not considered as if he did the action, or if he commits the action, right, this doesn't become additive to it, right? So if I contemplated committing the sin for weeks in advance, I still only get punished for the sin, but not for the contemplation in advance. But either way, it's not a full answer, right? You could have, if the question was, he wasn't thinking about sin, he might have been thinking about sin, and therefore he's really wicked, and the answer is, well, thought doesn't count, right? So that would have been a good answer. But instead, it says certain thought doesn't count, right? Or it doesn't count. It doesn't join to action, so whatever that means, right? So does that mean even when you actually commit the sin, the thought doesn't count, which shows you the thought doesn't count at all, right? So kal vachomer if you never end up committing the sin, right? Is that clear what it's doing? It's a little bit ambiguous, right? But it's clear that a certain type of thought doesn't count, at least as intensely, as you would have thought that it should have, such that it should offset the mitzvah, right? That's about all we know from that line. So then the Gemara says, don't worry, that's true, but there is an exception to all rules, and that is v'dilma meharher ba'avodat kochavim haveh. Maybe he was thinking about avodah zarah, and avodah zarah, well, something. Uchtid l'man tozid beit Yisrael b'libam. Right, quotes a pasuk in Yechezkel. Right, that the Jews are being punished for what happened in their heart in the context of avodah zarah. Now, What does that tell us about avodah zarah and thought? What? Well, before we get to why, what does it tell us? I'll take the why in a second. What does it tell us?
That it counts, the thought counts.
The thought counts. What type of thought? Avodah zarah. What type of thought of avodah zarah? Well, not totally clear. Is it only thought which then culminates in action? Right, because remember, is it going back on the previous line, meaning it's thought of avodah zarah is mitzaref l'ma'aseh, right? Or is it thought of avodah zarah, whatever that means, right, is itself avodah zarah, right? That's not clear.
Would it be an answer? Otherwise, it's trying to answer, right?
Well, so, good. So Ezra points out, well, wait a second. If the question is, maybe he was doing something in his mind that counts as an avera, so that should be something that doesn't need to be coupled with an action.
Right.
The problem is that the previous line had tried to answer the question by saying that machshava is not mitzaref l'maaseh. So the truth is that we can only prove that much. You're right. There's a good svara to say that it counts by itself, right? But in context, it might not mean that. It might, or coming back to what you said before, it might be that the fact that if I were to perform the action, in the case of avodah zarah, the fact that it was premeditated will make it worse, shows that the thought of avodah zarah, if not formally usur, is at least bad and therefore warrants punishment or something like that, right? It could be that we're in that nebulous zone, but even in the nebulous zone, punishment can be forthcoming. Yes, yeah, remind me your name. Oh, you had a question before, no? Okay. Whatever exactly it means, well, you know, hold the thoughts. We'll come back to avodah zarah in a second. Let's just prove that it's not just avodah zarah, but as we discussed before, there are other cases where machshava seems to count, right? So I just gave you a few. Number two, the Gemara in Yoma says, Hirhurei avera. Thoughts of sin, and in this context, sin probably means, it almost always means in this context, sexual sin, right? When you have stam avera, it's sexual thoughts, right? Illicit sexual thoughts, we should be careful there, right? Kashu me avera, they are, well, I'll translate that word, kashu, what's, well, kashe?
Harder,
more stringent than sin itself. Visimaneich recha dibisra. And the hint to this is the smell of meat. And the smell of meat elicits more desire sometimes than eating it, right? You're hungry, you go to a barbecue, you smell the meat, right? That is more overwhelming than actually eating it, right? Okay, good. What do you take this, what do you do with that line?
Well, by the fact that it gives the meat example, it shows that it's not necessarily talking about punishment or
oh, very good.
Count, but like how strong
very good. So this Gemara is not necessarily clear in either direction, because you could look at it and say, aha, there are certain sins, sexual sins, where the thought matters, right? Or you could look at it like Ezra does and says, it doesn't say it's worse. It says it's kashu, it's harder. Right. It is more overwhelming. It is more something. That doesn't mean it's worse spiritually, religiously, legally. It just means it's harder to something to deal with, right?
Right?
Right? Right? And there's a certain logic to that, right? Meaning, even if someone is particularly promiscuous, the chance that he's involved constantly in actual illicit sexual encounters, right? Like constantly, that constancy is not, you cannot, it's very, almost impossible, right? To match that with the constancy of illicit thoughts. Right, so it could just be that it's more overwhelming because it takes over your life in a way that the actual act cannot. Right, right, meaning it could. Right, there's more opportunity to think improperly. Right, it could overtake his dreams. Right, it could be just practically more overwhelming, but not necessarily spiritually worse. But you could read it obviously as saying no, it's actually worse. To give another example, this is the Urayim. The Urayim. Enumerates, Yireim Israel Ezra of Metz, one of the Balei HaTosfot, enumerates not being stubborn as in Avera. Lo takshu et od arpechem. Right? So Moshe always talks about the Jews are stubborn, so kadub beparashat ekev, umaltem et orlat levavchem, av arpechem lo takshu od, perish Kashyut Oref Kuchoshev Bilivo Shalolashuv Liyadzro. You think in your mind to not go back to your creator. To your creator. Umisha Shemechashev Over Bivlo Tashu. From the second you think, you violate. Right? So the Urain is quite clear that there are at least some sins which you violate in thought. Okay, so what do we do, right? The Gemara in Kiddushin, we said, is a little bit ambiguous, but it does seem to say that thoughts don't count except in Avodah Zarah, right? Even in the case when you are most likely to think they would count, which is when you end up committing the sin, where there it's not just that the thoughts are intrinsically improper, but they actually contributed to action. So they're the most likely thoughts to be considered themselves sinful, or at least contributing to a legal definition of sin. And nevertheless, Gemara rejects it, except maybe in certain cases, as Michael noted before. Right, it could be that that's only because in general Jews view them, they're not going to sing, and the Gemara goes on to discuss that. And then, on the other hand, you have this Gemara about sexual thoughts where it's more extreme, which may mean it's worse, or may just mean it's more overwhelming. And then you have clear evidence, just like we saw before. I gave you one example, but possibly some of the examples we talked about, we raised before, are also in this category of things that are seem to be intrinsically about thought, right? So which is it, right? So so what do we do? So the first thing is, yeah.
Also, like, how often could you really
Well, the question is, do you need a mitzvah, right? That's exactly the question. Ah, okay, good, good, right. So the assumption of your question is that in order to be defined as a sin, it must be an act, and therefore the Gemara must be assuming that machshava is an act, right?
There are many laws in mitzvah.
Very good. The problem is that there are many laws in mitzvah, and now they're not usually punishable, but they're still usher, right?
Right? How do you form the law for that? Like, we have a legal system, right? So how do you, like, form it?
Good. So there's a practical problem here, right? But there are two ways of formulating your question, right? One is, how could you enforce such a law? And the second is, how could you formulate a law? Enforcement is hard. But formulation is easier when you're dealing with a divine system where all you have to say is, yeah, any law of Shem Amai is a non-enforceable law, right? And presumably that's what would be going on here. Presumably this couldn't be enforced.
I agree. I'm just saying, what does
it align? Okay, good. So hold that thought for a minute, because we'll get to that, right, as we sort of see some of the ways that people resolve the seeming tension here, right? They're going to get exactly to that question, okay? So first thing is to note that several of the Rishonim really do sort of negate number two, right, the Gemara about Hirhurei Avera, going in the direction that Ezra said before, which is Hirhurei Avera, look at Rashi, Tavat Nashim, talking about the desire for women, Kashim Lachishet Besaro Yoter Migufo Shel Maaseh. He says they're harder. It doesn't mean they're worse. It just means it weakens you more than the sin itself, right, because, as I said, right, it takes over your life in a way that the act doesn't, right? If someone has a whatever, one-night stand with a prostitute is a terrible thing, right? But assuming he didn't think about it too much before, right? It just sort of happened and he forgets about it afterwards. It may be a terrible sin, but it didn't take over his life, as opposed to if he sits there, you know, pining over whatever's in his imagination, right? So Rashi says it's not about severity. It's about the physical toll of this behavior. However, if you look at number five, Rav Avram Minahar, one of the Rishonim from Provence, quotes Rashi, and then he pushes back, and he says, Va'ikar, the end of the second end of the first line, Kashet, Lefishi, Hirhu, Ba Mikoa Hamit Orer, Vukarov, Leshabesh, Hasaga, Gadol, Meha'avera, Hamorer, Hakora, Hamargish, She'eno Koach, Zach, Vidak, Timit Orer. So he gets very philosophical, but what does he say? He says, it's not just that it's harder, it's, in a certain sense, worse. Why is it worse? Because, I know his language is hard here, but it says, ba mikoa hamitorer, v'ukaro v'shabesh hasaga. It's worse because, where do thoughts lie? In the mind, right? In the soul. And therefore, it is a deeper corruption, right, than the act. Now, is it a worse sin? Close to it, right? But it could be that here he's distinguishing between, right, legally worse or maybe enforceably worse versus a more sort of broad statement about, okay, in terms of the broad picture, in terms of our goals in life of human perfection, right, in the long term, this is worse because it corrupts you in a different way. Now, who says that? So if you want a clearer formulation of that type of thing, if you look at 8 in the Rambam, right, the Rambam in the Mirna Vuchim says, there's a well-known saying of our sages, the thoughts about the sin are more dangerous than the sin itself. I can offer a good explanation of this saying. When a person is disobedient, this is due to certain accidents connected with the corporeal elements in his constitution. For man sins only by his animal nature, whereas thinking is a faculty of man connected with his form. A person who thinks sinfully sins therefore by means of the nobler portion of his self, and he who wrongly causes a foolish slave to work does not sin as much as he who wrongly causes a noble and free man to do the work of a slave. For this specifically human element, with all its properties and powers, should only be employed in suitable work in attempts to join higher beings, and not in attempts to go down and reach the lower creatures. Right? So what is the Rambam saying? You can see the rest of his explanation. Right? He says, it's worse. Why is it worse?
Because you're using your mind.
Because you're using your mind improperly, and your mind is more human than your body. So it doesn't, right? It sounds like just thinks, right? It sounds like it's just thinks. Now, again, it's hard to tell, but does he mean it's worse legally? Right? It could be, right? This gets very tricky, right? Because, you know, we're talking like, what's the line here? It's definitely not enforceable. So what's the difference between worse legally in God's eyes and worse like long-term spiritually? Very thin line, but it's not. But the Rambam points out that at least at a certain level, right? But look, I'll give you an example where even spiritually this makes sense, right? Reb Lichtenstein makes this point that if I ask you which is worse, a intentionally committed sin or an accidental sin, which would you say? Intentional. But which is harder to do tshuva from? Right, so he says often accidental because, right, because it's accidental, it wasn't as bad, you don't feel as much guilt, right? And therefore it's harder to extricate yourself from the situation, right? So if you are a willful sinner, you might eventually feel guilty. If you are just a careless person, that's also a bad posture toward God, the fact that you're always careless. But you might not be able to really internalize that. So at a certain level, someone who actually does something intentionally wrong, right, it might at some point wake up and say, I'm a really bad person. Whereas someone who is, you know, flippant, right, sometimes it's harder, right? So there are things where the act itself is not spiritually as bad, but it's still harder to extricate yourself from it, right? So there are lines like this. Yeah. What's your name again?
Benji.
Yeah.
It can also be harder when you do by accident.
Right, right, and it could be that it's harder to identify, right? So, right, so there are things where, which long-term could spiritually have a more detrimental effect, even if they're not as bad. But Rav Avraham and Rambam and the Rambam, Rav Avraham and Ahar, rather, and the Rambam, unlike Rashi, think that this Gemara is part of the conversation. Right? According to Rashi, it's not part of the conversation at all. Right? It's just saying that it's worse for you, not necessarily spiritually worse. According to the Rambam, Rav Avraham and Ahar, at some level, the thoughts of sin are worse. However, I should be careful that, is it true of all sin? All thoughts of sin? Not 100% clear, right? The way the Rambam presents it, I would tend to think possibly yes. Right? Possibly yes, because the Rambam, what? Right, it sounds like from the Rambam, yes, right, that any sort of fantasizing about sin or thoughts about sin corrupts the mind, right? That is what it sounds like. However, remember, in context, if Rashi is right, at least about the words in the Gemara, it may be in particular sexual sin. Does that? And the truth is that if you continue in the Rambam, the Rambam does seem to, even though the beginning it doesn't sound this way, the continuation of the Perek, the Rambam talks specifically about the lowliness of sexual sin, and this is the introduction to the sort of well-known piece in the Rambam that the Rambam's theory that Hebrew is Lashon HaKodesh because it lacks explicit sexual language, right? That's the second half that I gave you here. So from the second half of the Rambam, it might be that it's not all sin, right? But specifically sexual sin, right, corrupts the mind in a way that others that others do not. But at the beginning of the Rambam and Rav Avraham and Rambam, both of them don't very explicitly say that. Yeah.
The action almost always going to come with thought necessarily, right?
Say again.
The action is almost always going to necessarily come.
No.
Like I could decide, like.
You might have restrained, right? If we talk about this concept, you might be able to restrain yourself from actually engaging in illicit sexual encounters, but you might not be able to, right,
no,
control
saying the
thoughts.
Saying another way around, if you're going to do the action, if you're always
meaning the thought, right? The action is almost always preceded with some sort of thought, but there's
right.
a difference between, like I said, right, someone happens to be walking down the street and run to a prostitute and has a moment of weakness, right, that's different than, right, he's been planning this for months, right, so... It comes along with some thought, right? But not necessarily a lot.
Then it's just a question of how much thought, but it's still...
Correct. I mean, look, obviously you could come up with cases where it's not like that, right? Where... Well, unintentional, but let's say not unintentional. You could come up with cases with a certain level of culpability, right? Unintentional would be one level, but let's say someone doesn't intend to violate a sexual sin, but in a situation which that's possible, allows himself to get drunk. Right? So right, you could come up with cases where you are responsible for your actions, or at least getting yourself in that situation, right? You're not going to be legally culpable in the same way, but...
Yeah.
So we could come up with cases. Right? Tosfot holds like Rashi, that is more about being hard for you in the Maariv Chiyut. Again, it references you to the Rambam. Okay. So now we've suggested, right, at least on Rashi, we have a potential model to say that, listen, thoughts of sin don't count at all, right? And this Gemara is just describing that there are certain impacts, not sinful impacts, but just impacts of thoughts of sin, and at least the possibility of Amram and Arambam, and at least the beginning half of the Rambam, that even if it's not maybe as legally bad, at some level spiritually, dwelling on sin is in fact worse because it corrupts the more divine or the more human part of the human being. Right, which is the mind. What we have not yet suggested, right, though, is, right, at this point we've now set up extremes. But as we said, right, to really figure it out, you need to ask two more questions, which is, how intense the thought, and what types of sin, right? So far we have one Gemara that says Avodah Zarah is the most likely to be violated in thought, and depending on how you read the Gemara in Yoma, the second candidate would be, right, it would be sexual sins, right? Do you have a language to explain why those might be singled out? And if they're singled out, in what way are they singled out? Right? And this is always a question. In Hebrew, we would put it as siman versus siba, right? Meaning, are these causative or correlative? Meaning, are these two... Is there something unique about them that causes them to be worse, or do they correlate to some broader category that's worse? Right, so we'd have to ask both, are these, right, is there something unique about these, right, or do they stand in for some other category, right, if they are unique, right, if it's not a general principle, are they unique, and if they're unique, are they unique in and of themselves, or are they unique because they stand in for a category which is unique? Yeah. So again, right, there's still a difference between like a thought dwelling on it, right? So that goes back to the what types of thought. So let's, right, we'll have to try to distinguish. But let's start on the sin side, okay? So what do you think? Do you think that if these are unique, to the extent they're unique, are they unique in themselves? Do they stand in for something, right? Or let's start, why would they be unique themselves? Forget standing. Why would they be unique in and of themselves?
What is our confusion? Well,
because?
The foundation of everything else that we...
Okay, so Ezra just said, well, it's the most important. Okay, right, a quantitative claim, yeah.
I would just say, because by definition, the Avodah Zarah is rooted not in the physical action. While that is still prohibited, the Yitzhak, the Icarus, belief.
Good, right, so there's another way of taking it. It's not that Avodah is just worse, it's that Avodah Zarah by nature is different because the reason Avodah Zarah is so bad is because it manifests a rejection of God, right? It's the thought behind it, right? Bowing to the idol, right, is bad, but it's bad more because of what it represents, right? And we could deduce a lot of evidence for this. So, for example, the Gemara has a discussion of are you liable if you're ovid avod zarah me'ahava u'me'ira? Right? Now, what is avod zarah? It's a good question, right? Is it, the Gemara talks about it, but let's say someone worships avod zarah out of ahavat ha'adam. Right? They're in love with someone. They don't believe in the avod zarah. The Gemara says, brings a machlok at what its status is, but it's, there's a possibility that you're not liable. Why? He bowed to avod zarah. Yeah, but avod zarah is about rejecting God. Or there's a discussion we've shown him. Is accepting heresy legally equivalent to avodah zarah? Right? There's no act of avodah zarah, but is it, right? So like not adopting another religion, but rejecting all religion. Would that in certain ways be equivalent to avodah zarah? So the Ritva, for example, suggests this explain, is expand them on the Radbaz, says yes, and therefore the Radbaz says to convert to Islam, even though there's no act of avodah zarah, is still Yehareg Val Yavor. Because really, what Yehareg Val Yavor is not avodah zarah, it's the rejection of Judaism. And accepting heretical beliefs, even if there's no act of avodah zarah, is still that, right? It's still a rejection, right? So it could be that avodah zarah is unique because the sin is so much more wrapped up in your mind. Now, in sexuality, this is interesting because you would have actually, I would have said the exact opposite, right? The sexuality is about the most, right, physical of the sins that you could get. Right? And therefore, that would be, right? It's very much tied to the body in a way that avodah zarah is not, right? So it complicates it, right? Right? It complicates it, right? If you think that sexual thoughts are also particularly bad, right? You've got to figure out why. Now, it could be that, like the Rambam says, maybe it's, right, it's sort of the incongruity of taking that which is the most physical and allowing it to overtake your mind, right, that is particularly unique, or it could be that it shares certain things in common with avodah zarah. How would that be true? Right, give me evidence that might be true. Okay, good. So sometimes the Gemara says that people worship avodah zarah lahasir arayot. Very good. Right? Also, think about what you say in Kriyat Shema every day. Right? As it's understood by Chazal, Lo tasuru acharei levavchem, acharei enichem, acharei levavchem zu minut, acharei enichem zu znut. Right? But what's the context there? Is don't be led astray from God. Right? There is a certain sense in which, right, completely engrossing yourself in the world of the body, right, the real problem is that it's leading you away from God, right? So there could be that even though it's not really in the mind, right, the effects, and especially as the Rambam puts it, sexual thought, right, accomplishes taking you away from God in your, right, your ability to focus on God in a way that other things don't, right? So you could come up with ways. If you look, for example, at the Me'iri in number 10, the Me'iri in 10 doesn't take it this way. The Me'iri says, I mean, that's very nice, but actually I think these are stand-ins, right? So he says, "Olam yizaner adam shelo harba avira shafu bi shemachshav ara ena kadosh baruch hu mitzarfal lemaase." He said, "Listen, the Gemara in number one says that even if someone commits the sin, the machshava doesn't add to the severity of the sin." Kolmar she'enen nashbak ilu asta maase. So he says that's not what it means. It doesn't mean that when you commit the sin, it doesn't make the sin worse. It means that it's not as if you did it, right? Miri says, first things first. The first Gemara doesn't mean it doesn't count. It just means it's not as if you did the sin. That's all it means. Does it mean it's not anything? No. But then he makes a second point, right? So he says, the first Gemara should not be read as saying the thoughts don't count, but that they don't count as much as action.
Right.
The second point, he says, what types of thoughts? So instead of going directly to the question of what type of sin, he goes in Adam's direction, which is, it's not thinking about sin, it's plans to commit sin. Right? That the case is where he wasn't held back from committing the sin because of his own yetzer tov, but because he never got the opportunity to sin. Right? In such a case, he didn't commit the sin, so it's not as bad, but because he planned to do the sin and
would have
had he gotten the opportunity, it is at least somewhat sinful. But then he says, if you understand the Gemara this way, then let's go back to the Gemara one second. So according to the Meiri, the first half of the Gemara isn't telling you that Machshava doesn't count as sin at all. What does it mean? Machshava isn't as bad. But wait a second. So then what does the next line about Avodah Zarah tell you? That Avodah Zarah doesn't just count, but it... that committing it in thought is as bad as committing it in action. Right? And then he comes to the second point, which is, okay, and what does Avodah Zarah stand for? Is it only Avodah Zarah? He says, no. V'yesh dvarim shamachshava maaseh gamurhu. There are certain types of sin where thought is a full action. And what is that? V'hu kol hadvarim atluyim b'yichud u'shar enyanei ha'emunah. It's all mitzvot that are about faith. Because it's about faith, then the primary way of idling them is in your mind. Shari ikar dvarim elu b'machshava heim. V'hu shenemar avodah zarah l'man tfoset liba, zer tfoset b'nei Yisrael b'libam. U'mishabad dvar avira liyado v'kavash b'yitro v'tzil atzmo mimena reizu kose mitzvah. Right, so now, again, we've already sort of run out of time, but I'll take another 2 minutes because I do have to run to Mincha. The Meiri, right, already tells us two things, right, which is that the contrary evidence that we have here can be solved in two ways. One is to recognize that the limitation on thought counting as an Avera is not absolute, right? The second point is the types of thought we're talking about are not dwelling on sin but planning to commit sin. And three, it also matters what type of sin it is. Because if the sin is one that is about faith, then thought is actually the violation of said sin. And therefore, in such a case, it will reach its full or near full severity simply by committing the deed in thought. The Gilyoni Ashas goes even broader than him, and this comes back to zero point, right? Which says, Meiri says this thing about faith, but there's a much easier one, and that is any avera where the avera is about thought. Forget faith, it's about thought. Right, so he says, Hainu rak v'davar she'ein sivui amachshava. Rak amased, aza machshava lasot amased, einenesh. Right? If the avera is to do the action, so then thinking to the action is not doing it. But if the avera is to think, then guess what? Then if you violate it in thought, then you violate it in thought. Now, if you just look, I want to make two more points. Okay? Before I come to the Maharal, someone asked, I don't remember who, but wait a second, how could you even command this? Right? So in 14, I gave, and you'll look at it inside, the Sefer HaChinuch thinks that Shalom Lehit Avot, right? Lotach mode might be about action, but the other formulation in Vayet Hanan, not to desire, he thinks is in Machshava. So in that context, he asked, well, how can you command someone not to think? Isn't it impossible to control your thoughts? Right, so if you look at the last paragraph in 14, he says, "Ve'al titma lomar ve'ech yeh biado shel adam lemno alivavo mi ha'ta'avot el otzer kol kli chemda shi'ira b'rishut chaveiro v'imukulam reik v'reikav ve'ech tavo miniyah b'tarav ma'ashi efshar." Right? How could you control your thoughts? How can the Torah command you something that's impossible? He says, "Shezeh davarino kain." That's not true. Ve'lo yomru oto zulati ha'tipshim ha'ra'im v'chata'im v'nashotam. Only stupid people say that. Why? You have the ability. You think you don't? Well, the Torah is teaching you by commanding you what you think is, you do. Get over it. Okay? And he says, next line, v'libo, your heart is in your hand, whatever you want to do, you can do. Right? So how do you command it? His answer is, because we can, because you can do it. Get over it yourself. You can do it. Right? The answer is, don't be too worked up about it. You can do it. Okay. So again, have we covered the whole thing? No, and again, we'll do it a little bit more on Thursday, but so far what we've seen is, right, to answer this question, we need to ask a few questions, right, which is, when the Gemara says, Ein Kodesh Baruch Hu Mitzar for Lamasa, does that mean it doesn't count at all, or it counts less, right? And what do we do with the Gemara in Yoma? Is it about sinfulness or something else? If it is about sinfulness, then we have the possibility, well, it might depend on the sin, and we saw several different formulations, either Meiri, only faith-based sins, or the Gilyon Ashas, no, thought-based sins, right? And then we add the question, okay, but how can you command thought-based sins? The answer is, well, because you can control your thoughts. If you can control your thoughts, then God can command you about them, right? Maybe you can't enforce it because only human beings could enforce it. It doesn't mean it's not usur. Sexuality, we said, is a little bit complicated in all of these formulations, right? So you could either parry the problem with Rashi, right, by just saying, well, you're right, sexual thoughts don't count. However, we saw from the second half of the Rambam, he does seem to think that sexual thoughts do particularly count. We suggested a few models, either because obsessing about that which is the most bodily of sins actually corrupts the mind in a way things don't, or based on Chazal's drasha of Lo Tatur Achar Levavchem Achar Einechem, they have the same problem of Avodah Zarah, that they also lead you away from God. Right? So we could suggest other formulations. I'll show you one more thing. We're not going to get to Rabbeinu Bachya at all. But if you look at the Maharal makes a few very important points. And he says as follows. First he says, the Gemara in previously says that if you plan to do a mitzvah, God will count it as if you did it. So first question is, why is that true? So he first says, well, listen, if you plan to do a mitzvah and you don't get the opportunity, so the Gemara says, Abal Latar Messiah, in general, when you try to do a mitzvah, God helps you, which means as you plan to do a mitzvah, right, it's more likely you will succeed because you would have divine help, and therefore your thought to do the mitzvah is closer to accomplishing your goal such that that can be closer to action. But since God will never help you commit an avera, right, your plan to do the avera is farther away. So the first thing is, he says, the thought we're talking about is not dwelling on the sin, but planning to do it, right? And in that level, since planning to do a sin is less likely to succeed than planning to do a mitzvah, right, it is less real, right, and therefore less punishable. Right. Second point, he says on a fundamental level, it's not meant to happen, right? It's like a metaphysical claim, right? Sin is not meant to happen, and therefore until it happens, it's like contrary to existence, right? Which is another reason why it might not count. Then he goes to the Gemara in Yoma, what do we do with Kashin here, Hurei Avera? And what about Avodah Zarah? So he says, sexual sins, he says, he negates its relevance because of Rashi, right? Even though he doesn't... but then he says, I don't understand Rashi. So then he suggests his own thesis. And then he says... And again, he's the only one that we have, at least in this sheet, who says, listen, Avodah Zarah, I understand, right? That's really, really bad. For the reasons we've talked about. The reason sexual thoughts are bad is because there's a specific avera of Megara Yetzer Hara, right? That we see in other places, it's not just bad to commit sexual sins, but it's usur to, right, to stimulate your Yetzer Hara. So once you say that, then sexual sins, like Avodah Zarah, become one of those things that are uniquely in the realm of thought. So, again, we haven't exhausted it, but the points we have seen are that you have to, in order to understand the sugya, you have to understand a few points. One are different levels of liability, right? Two is distinguish between different types of thought, right? Dwelling on a sin and planning. Different types of avera, either those that are violated in thought or those that are about faith, right? And then you have to recognize that if you take Rashi's position, sin isn't only bad because it's sinful, it also has effects on you. Right, and therefore the language that we find in the Gemara might not always be about liability, but it might be about other impacts, spiritual, physical, psychological, or otherwise. Okay, so that's just sort of an opening into the sugya. And like I said, to fully understand in each mitzvah, in each case, you'll have to judge on each of these axes. And again, we'll see a test case on Thursday if you happen to be here for Mishmar, but at least you've opened up some of the questions here, and you see how reading an Agadata carefully, right, can force you to think very seriously about philosophical questions. Also, very quickly, the line between halakha, philosophy, agadata becomes very blurry, because this is clearly an agadic philosophical statement, but the impact on law is actually quite important, which is one of those things that you tend to see in agadata, and I'm definitely going to be late for Minchah if I don't go.